opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Welcome. You have found us, Cooking Like a Pro podcast. Chef Cal back from my journey. Thank you, Mrs. Chef, for, shout out to Chef Sadie for taking care of, me being out of town last week. Appreciate that.
We had a lot of fun.
Oh, the ladies were in charge. Oh my goodness. All right. What'd you talk about?
We talked about kitchen keeping it clean, keeping it organized, staying on top of things.
Well, see, I wasn't anywhere where I had coverage. Yeah, so.
You'll get the podcast when I get live.
All right. Well, sounds good. And they can get that at, Cooking Like a Pro Podcast. You can go to cookinglikeapropodcast.net. If you'd like to send in a question, or you can give us a holler down here, that will work too. You can call us down here at 530-605-4567. Again, 530-605-4567. Yes, and our engineer Ben would be happy to take a question or patch you through. But anyway, so you're listening to us either on KCNR 1460 AM or 96.5 FM. So I noticed that you had handed me some information. So it was filling in the gaps. I'm talking to my wife here. Filling in the gaps, but making the most of every minute. So I'm guessing that this was just being staying productive in the kitchen and kind of more of a timing thing.
Definitely, because, you know, especially in the restaurant business, we look for our servers hiding in corners, you know, those days. So even at home, there's times when there's a little bit of downtime. Instead of scrolling or letting that time be wasted, what can you be doing in the meantime to stay on top of things?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think when you look at a recipe that has, you know, a variety of, you know, things need to be done. Most recipes are the first thing you're going to have is to purchase the product. So, you know, you can purchase things ahead of time. I know that we generally like to go once a week so you can get that done and maybe get some of your, you know, more perishable things a little more often than that. But outside of that, purchasing, and then you also have, before you cook it, you have a time that we call prep time. And a lot of times that prep time will be done, you know, as the meal's being prepared. Well, if I'm, for example, you know, preparing, you know, get all my product on a Saturday or a Sunday for the week, let's say I get it on Saturday, it's a great day to go shopping, and then use Sunday to prepare a few of those things, like dicing your onions up maybe for one of your dishes you're going to do, or, you know, pounding out your chicken, or just getting a little of that prep done. Because, you know, in the grocery stores, you'll see a lot now, what they're doing is they're pre-prepping food. You can buy, you know, carrot sticks, you can buy diced onions, diced bell pepper and stuff. And I think when you, instead of, and it's always going to cost more money because you're paying for someone else to do that. You know, maybe it's not a substantial amount of money, but you also want to work on your knife skills and such. So you buy your stuff on Saturday and then make a plan on Sunday to get some of those things out of the way. Maybe put it, well, I don't think I put it in a baggie, but, you know, get some kind of little glass containers or something that's a little more, health friendly, doesn't have so many microplastics in it, maybe. And I don't know, you know, someone needs to come up with something. I'm going off a little bit of a tangent here, but somebody needs to come up with something because this microplastic thing bugs me a lot. You know, it's in our food, it's in our oil, I mean, our air, it's in our soil. So one of the things I'm thinking is, well, we all use plastic baggies. So what are we supposed to start using? So there needs to come up with an alternative to the plastic bag. I don't know if you have any ideas, but you're always telling me to put stuff in glass.
Yeah, I'm trying to use glass jars. I mean, I do use some of the harder plastic ones that are long-term use. We can get a lot of time out before that they eventually go to the landfill, because they will eventually. But if you can stick with glass. Yeah.
Well, you know, I was talking to my Uncle Mike. Shout out to Uncle Mike. He's way up there in the recycle area. And they do now have a biodegradable plastic. And it's fairly new. I don't think it's, I've seen it out on the market anywhere, but we were talking about that. Is that what you understood it to be? Some sort of a,
well, it
of
is
a plastic that could go into a landfill?
Well, it's the new green bags that are in the produce section, and they really don't. They really don't break down.
Those things, how do you open those? They're the you need to, I don't know what you need to, you know, like the post office, I remember my mom was at the post office and she had these little things she'd wear on her thumb, you know.
So you could pick things up.
Yeah, so you could pick, like, you could separate the mail. You need one of those when you go to the grocery store.
Yeah, so even though that they're trying to make a move to be more green, they really aren't. They really aren't going to break down. And so do you know, if you're doing a home compost, do not take those green bags from the produce section and put them in your compost. Don't do it.
Not yet.
No.
Ooh, those don't work. Okay. Well, you know, someone's going to have to come up with an idea here, and I haven't really thought about it.
Well, back in the day, we had paper bags.
Yeah, ask Elon Musk. Yeah, you know, you're right. We had the paper bags.
We had the lunch sacks.
I don't remember plastic bags.
No, there weren't.
When I was young.
Mm-mm.
You know, mom would wrap the sandwich up in wax paper or maybe plastic wrap, but they didn't have baggies. So, anyway, yeah, well, throw it in the lunch. Well, they don't have lunch boxes anymore either.
Well, you can also buy net bags that are made out of cotton or cloth so that you can put your produce in those.
Well, I think it's a great idea. If you can stay away from, anytime you can stay away from the plastics, so you don't get all those microplastics in there. But getting back to just filling in the gaps, basically, the time gaps when we're working in the kitchen, you know, a lot of the stuff just takes, you know, just a few minutes to do. You get a cutting board out and you prep all these things. Maybe you prep 5 or 6, 7 things for the week. And you'd be surprised when you come home and you go to make whatever dish you're making, and maybe the mushrooms and the onions and the chicken are already, you know, cut up and portioned.
Well, and there's two ways to look at gap time. Let's say you have your normal daily activities. Is there a gap in your normal daily activities that you can do a little bit of cooking activities? We have a friend back east who was talking about, she works from home, and if she has a 15-minute break, she'll take that 15 minutes to go upstairs or downstairs where her kitchen is, do the prep for the night, so the things are pulled out and ready to go. So when she gets off of work from her home office, she can go and cook. So that's taking that gap time in your time off of work at home to get things done in the kitchen.
Now, is that Marissa?
Yeah, that is Marissa.
Oh, yeah, Marissa. Well, she's also way too organized.
Yeah, she's very efficient.
Now, very efficient.
But on the other side is if you're in the kitchen working and you have a gap in time in the kitchen, what else could you be doing? So for me, if I'm in where the microwave's going and I've got a minute, 30 seconds, I will sit there and work on laundry. Mm-hmm. You know, that I can get the socks done in 90 seconds.
Yeah.
Or, you know, for me, that's when I do my mini workouts on the counter, you know, push-ups and things like that. Using time efficiently. If you're waiting for the microwave, if you're waiting for the water to boil, you can use that time to do other things, maybe to clean out your utensil drawer or to refill your napkins or to restock your paper towels.
Well, I know that in the restaurant business, we always had that saying, if you got time to lean,
you got time to clean.
So that was always something. And one of the most important things is trying to get people to clean up after themselves. I think you said you might have talked about that. But when you're preparing something, stay clean as you go. You know, I mean, take things to the dishwasher, spray things off, get them ready, put them in the dishwasher for that matter. Whatever it is, then that way your workspace is less cluttered. You can be more organized that way. You can actually get more things done.
Another one was A, B, C, D.
Okay.
Always be carrying dishes.
Always
if you're in a walk from point A to point B and there's a dirty dish that you can pick up and take with you to the sink or to the kitchen, take it then.
Hey, Ben, did you hear that? A, B, C, D. Always,
carrying dishes.
Dishes. Because our producer also, we were just talking off air, and he does some food service work as well for front of the house. And how many times have you seen people that don't do that? That they don't, they'll walk right by a table and not pick up dishes.
Times.
I see it all the time, but always be carrying.
That's one of the things I'm really good at is I've always, you know, something in my hand going in or out.
Something in your hand. Yeah. I know that we always used to use the term keep your head on a swivel. So it was basically always be looking to see if there's something that can be done. Mm-hmm. 'Cause in a restaurant, I mean, it's important. It's valuable. A lot of times, you know, if someone drops a fork, well, remember their meal kind of comes to a hit the brakes, you know, direct stop because they don't have a fork and it's time to eat. And they can't do that because they dropped the fork. So, you know, you got to be aware of the things that are going on. So we'll be back in just a moment and we'll continue to have this discussion. But we appreciate you listening to us here at, Cooking Like a Pro podcast. We'll be back in just a moment.
Homegrown tomatoes up in the morning and out in the garden. Get your ripe ones, don't get a hard one. Plant them in the spring, eat them in the summer.
Every day, your life is filled with choices. And when a health crisis happens, you need to be prepared to choose the best healthcare partner. That's when Shasta Regional Medical Center is there to answer the call above the rest. Ranked best in Reading and in the nation for patient safety and clinical excellence. You can be confident that when you choose Shasta, you are choosing superior care, safety, and excellence for you and your family. Choose Shasta at ShastaRegional.com.
This is Colonel Danny Gillum, the host of Frontlines of Freedom, the nation's largest military news and talk radio show. We address the most pressing issues facing the security of our nation, our armed forces, our veterans, and their families. Please join us every Saturday morning from 6 to 8 on 96.5 FM and 1460 AM KCNR, your talk radio show.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wynn Carpenter and Terry Raposa and Janet Chandler. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archive link.
Come out and play. Have you seen the bill? We all have to pay. The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson state of mind.
Good morning, Reading. This is Rick Hughes, host of The Flatline. Heard every Sunday morning on KCNR 96.5 FM at 7 a.m. in the morning. Just want you to know that God has given us two ends, one to think with and one to sit on. And success in life depends on which one you use. It's heads you win and tails you lose. Come join me on The Flatline and learn about God's tremendous problem-solving device. 7 a.m. every Sunday morning, 96.5 FM, KCNR.
Welcome back to Cooking Like a Pro. We'd like to just take a moment to personally thank Charlou, Kathy, and the whole Charlou's gang down at Charlou's Tap House for sponsoring Cooking Like a Pro podcast. Charlou's located in the Shasta Gateway Shopping Center, just 10 minutes south of town, and one of the very few family-run restaurants left in the area. They're open 7 days a week, serving the best homemade pizza, pasta, fresh, crisp salads that you'll find around town, and they're now serving house-made creamy, authentic Italian gelato, all in a relaxing, unhurried family atmosphere. And don't forget to enjoy the incredible beer wall, a variety of IPAs and frosty porters and ciders, and also the adventure room. They're a beautiful adventure room. If you got a kid that needs a birthday, something to do with, for their birthday, got an entire room dedicated to numerous bouncy houses and all kinds of arcades and such. And they can even have Charlou himself show them how to make pizza, and they'll be making their own lunch as well. So it keeps them busy anyway. A lot of fun. So go down and, save some time. You can find it all at charlews.com. That's charlews.com. Let them know Chef Cal and Mrs. Chef personally sent you. This, I gather now, since I missed you last week, that this packet that you and Mrs. Chef and Chef Sadie went over, this is a packet that's numerous pages that you handed me. And this is available?
This is available.
On our website?
Yes, if you go to culinaryyours.net, there's a pop-up to get our kitchen keeping guide.
Is it free or does it cost a couple bucks?
It is free.
Free? When are we going to start charging for stuff some of these days? There's a beautiful vegetable thing in there. I think that's the only thing we've ever charged for. I think it's $7 or something. But anyway, but go on there. There's a ton of free stuff. But this is great. I'm looking at this, and it's got Mrs. Chef's recommended tools for cleaning, for just the basic things you need from start to finish. And I know that, for example, we use a lot of vinegars and concoctions that you've made up over the years instead of, you know, some of the harsher chemicals, which are not only not good for you, but also harsher for your cutting boards and your pots and pans and stuff.
Yeah, you just need simple things, you know, a diluted bleach for your cutting boards, or run it through the dishwasher for the, what do you call it, the spray cleaner for the windows and the glass. We gave out that recipe last week with just water, a little bit of dish soap, a little bit of vinegar, and alcohol. That's it.
Yeah. What is this Miss Chef's top tier for keeping your kitchen clean?
Top tip.
Top tip. So is that saying you invite someone over to wash your dishes?
My top tip is, if you want to get your house clean, invite someone over and look how fast you will get your house clean.
I would agree with that. I would agree with that. Matter of fact, as a husband, I would say you should invite special guests over every weekend.
Every week at least. Because you see things through different eyes. For some reason, you tend to not see things all the time, but then you invite someone over, the rose-colored glasses come off, and you start seeing through other people's eyes of how dirty and disorganized your house is.
I just invite unorganized people over, and then they don't notice, and it saves me a lot of time from having to clean up, I guess. But anyway, so your grocery list is also part of this, and this is just a single, you know, sheet of paper you can print out. It's free, but it's great for when you take it to the store. But the idea is you put it on your, we have it attached to our refrigerator and a little magnet. And then when you run out of, you know, popcorn, you write it on there. You run out of sugar, you write it on there. You know, you feel like, okay, I need some lettuce, you write it on there. And there's all these different sections for both, you know, your health and body, for your pantry and your bulk items, area for your pet food, for anything your pet needs, paper cleaning. And there's a dairy frozen section, you want that towards the end, right? Because the grocery stores always put the milk all the way in the back. It's their
way of getting you to see things on the way by.
The gotcha item, yeah. And snacks and produce and deli and meat and seafood and stuff. So there's all these different sections. You write it down, and then when you're ready to go to the store, you don't miss anything. In the restaurant, we have something like this in a kitchen, in a professional kitchen. I call it an almost out sheet. Because you've got just literally just hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of items, if not thousands. And if someone's baking and they're using a recipe that might even be a little obscure, or an ingredient that's fairly obscure, you're not always going to know when you do inventory. Maybe you missed that thing and all of a sudden you run out because you didn't know you were low. And in a restaurant, you don't want to run out, because if you run out, you're running to the store.
And that's great if you are not the purchaser, but you are the one that used the last thing, letting the purchaser know that they can go get that at the store the next time.
Yeah, well, and hopefully it's not at the last. You know, I mean, hopefully, they let you know. Well, I call it almost out. Like, okay, you're almost out of this. Okay, you got a little bit left, you know, because generally in a restaurant, you know, you might order, if you're busy, you might order twice a week. You know, you have the truck back up to the back, but you're buying, you know, 50 pounds of sugar or flour or whatever it is. So you need to know when you're getting close. But you also don't want food that's just sitting around that's not being used. In a restaurant, we call that inventory, and you want that inventory to rotate as much as possible. Because we have a term called FIFO.
FIFO, we talked about that last week.
Okay, yeah, first in, first out. To make sure that you're rotating your stock. So you're not using, you know, something that's older, and then the product's getting older than it needs to be because you didn't finish using it. So.
And if it's something you buy regularly over and over and over again, you pretty much, when you take that one out of the cabinet to stock, say, the refrigerator, put that on the list so that you will restock that. That will go back into your cabinet with a fresh one from the store. So when the one that's in the fridge runs out, you've got one to take out. So that you're always constantly rotating these things that you're constantly using.
It's good. It's good to rotate. I mean, I think that's kind of one of the main factors of people shopping in large places like, you know, Costco, where you buy, you know, there's six of something or four of something in a case or in a container. So you always have that backup. But having some place to write it down is the key, because you know, well, I don't know about everyone else, but my memory isn't as, you know, good as it used to be. And it's just one of those things that you have to be careful on.
And also, if you're not, if you are digital and you do have the iPhone, you can use the notes and you can share it with family members so that each of you can access the shopping list so that if mom's going to go shopping and your teenager used up the last of the ketchup, they can go in and put it on the list.
Yeah, sure. You lost me. You start going on, you start talking about tech, you know. I mean, yeah, you can have a note, have a list. They share it through the internet. No, I think I'd rather have a pencil and a piece of paper. Remember, we have to remember, folks, that, you know, that my wife, Mrs. Chef, is the techie of the two of us. I'm not going to probably ever use my phone.
Which is why we have the paper version on the refrigerator for you.
For all of us. Hey, you know, I was at a place and I was, helping some people with some food over the last week, out of town. And one of the things that I noticed, it was so surprising, it's the first time I'd been there, is that they didn't have a scale. Now, I'm really used to measuring everything. I'm just really, you know, that's just the way I am. I do it quickly. It doesn't take any time at all. But it's something that I've always done. I want to be accurate, even if it, when it's something that I make all the time. I might be a little more careful even if I'm baking something. So maybe I'm measuring, you know, grams, kilograms and things like that as opposed to, you know, ounces or pounds or, you know, liquid measurements of cups and quarts and gallons. But I'll tell you, you need those containers. And I was really kind of surprised to be consistent. You know, understanding parts and understanding ratios, understanding, you know, sometimes it's weight. Sometimes it's a V for volume or maybe a W, like I mentioned, for weight. And as we're going through and we're putting the recipes in the cookbook, that's one thing. It's like, okay, what are people going to be looking for? And you look at all these different books and there are not a whole lot of people that are doing it the same. I mean, you want people to understand that when they see, you know, 2PC period, that it's two pieces. You know, and obviously we'll have a glossary that explains that in the book, but when it comes to just, you know, generally grabbing a recipe, you need to know what those things mean.
Well, I think too, in professional, what I learned from you is we do a lot of things by weight more. We're not looking at cups and teaspoons and tablespoons. We are looking at a package that is based upon a weight.
Yeah. Well, a good example of that is if I was making something, if I was making a recipe and it said use it's a cup. There's 8 ounces in a cup. Let's say the recipe said use 1 cup of powdered sugar. Okay, well, that's fine. That's a full cup. What if it said to use 8 ounces of powdered sugar? So, well, a liquid measurement would be the same. But a weight measurement for something as light as powdered sugar, you would have, you know, 2 to 3 times as much powdered sugar as you needed if you went by that. So you do have to, you know, most things will be very, very close. A cup of this versus a cup of that. But there are certain things that are a lot lighter that you have to be careful of.
Yeah, because 8 ounces of water equals 8 ounces of water. Volume, yep. Weight versus fluid. That is the set point of determining what an 8 ounces means. It means a cup. But when you go to flour and powdered sugar and things like that, their weight is totally different than volume.
Yeah, you need to start there. So anyway, it is one of the things, you know, learning measurements are very simple. There's not a lot you need to know. Really it starts at, you know, there's, you know, 8 ounces in a cup, you know, or actually I usually go, it's 2 cups in a pint, 2 pints in a quart, 4 quarts in a gallon. So once you know that, then you've got 8 ounces in the cup, 16 ounces in a pound. There's really not a whole lot of you know, measurements you need other than that. You got the basic weights, the basic volumes, but you do have to have the containers. You know, you can't take a coffee cup and say, you know, unless that's what you always use. I was looking at one of my grandma's recipes the other day and it was just, you know, in one of those magazines back in the day where they showed you how to, you know, make bread and you know, hang up, you know, something in your closet and, you know, fix your carburetor in your car. I mean, I don't know if it's good housekeeping. I don't know what they were, but they just kind of show the wide variety and range. And I'm looking at that and it's like saying, you know, a handful of this Well, my hands are a lot bigger than your hands. Mm-hmm. I'm saying that to my wife. So there's always going to be a little bit of variance, and maybe the final product comes out a little bit drier, or maybe not quite.
Okay. A pinch of this and a pinch of that. Now, there's a two-finger pinch, and there's a three-finger pinch, and a four-finger pinch. When you say a pinch of something, what are you thinking it means?
You know, I'm thinking probably a sprinkle. I would say when I get to anything less than quarter of a teaspoon, because you can't really measure. After that, you start getting into pinches, you know, into like little sprinkles. But I noticed this the other day when I was cooking and I was writing down some volumes. And quite often I go by just watching, by looking at what I look at something and I know that this is how much it needs.
You can tell the coverage.
And I sprinkle it. Yeah, with the coverage and that works well. But you know, that's practice. But anyway, we're going to take a break here at the bottom of the hour and then we'll be right back. Thanks for listening to Cooking Like a Pro. Back in just a moment.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore. When the world seems to shine like you've had too much wine, that's amore.
John Cruz here with America Outdoors Radio. Be sure to tune in this weekend and catch the latest in fishing, hunting, conservation, and destinations. If you love spending time in the field or on the water or in the woods, you're going to love this show. It's America Outdoors Radio, the fastest growing outdoors radio show in the nation. Tune in Saturdays from noon to 1 p.m. on 96.5 FM and 1460 AM KCNR, your talk radio.
Dignity Health and Reading West Rotary present the 18th Annual Taste of Reading 2025, Sunday, June 8th from noon until 4 at the Reading City Hall Sculpture Park. Chefs are preparing their finest foods for you to sample with great wines and microbrews, plus live entertainment on three stages. Get your tickets for food and drink sampling in advance at tasteofreading.org.
North Valley Distributing at 3081 Crossroads Drive is a major supplier of electrical and electronic products for the industrial and construction market. North Valley Distributing focuses on quality and reliability. Their products include fuses, batteries, wiring devices, connectors, lighting solutions, circuit protection components, and electrical tools and more. North Valley Distributing at 3081 Crossroads Drive, a proud sponsor of the Reading Colt 45s.
Attention veterans, did you know that Shasta College and Simpson University have veterans resource centers to assist you in your educational pursuits? These centers offer a wide range of support services, including financial aid, tutoring, IT support, and more. We understand the unique challenges that veterans face and are committed to helping you succeed. Our experienced staff is here to help you navigate the college experience and achieve your academic and career goals. Don't let anything stand in your way. This message is brought to you by Senator Maurice Johannesson, former Secretary of California Veterans Affairs.
Nice bikini, better jeans, bulgur wheat, but a big warm bun and a huge hunk of meat. Cheeseburger in paradise. How about all the lasagna flies? Not too particular, not too precise. Not just a
welcome back to Cooking Like a Pro. And we were talking about a variety of things. But measurements and such going into the last break, and I mentioned sprinkling, and for me, because I've been teaching for, you know, decades, about four decades, from grade school to high school to everything in between and beyond, I always try to develop some sort of a training exercise to get people to learn how to do something. And on sprinkling is no different than that. When I sprinkle something, I might be sprinkling a little bit of freshly crushed pepper over an omelet. I might be sprinkling some cheese over top of a pizza that I'm getting ready to bake. But whatever it is that we're putting on top of something, we want it to be even. We don't want it to be able blotch of pepper here and none here. So we want to get we want to practice. We want to practice and get used to and get good at sprinkling. And so what I'll do for this, and it might sound strange, but if you can't sprinkle well, I mean, it is a skill. It's one of the many skills in the kitchen that will help you. And when you go to sprinkle, I always would get my students, and I would give them, you know, kind of a, what's that big paper or the big poster paper like that, something pretty good size. And then I would have them take like black paper and then sprinkle salt, like rock salt on it with their fingers, and then just keep going. And then when they get done, I'd come by and look at it, say, okay, do it again, and keep going. And it's just like anything else. It's practice. Practice, you get it down. Muscle memory is another one where you just have to keep practicing until it becomes something that you remember instinctively. So sprinkling is something that's important. So get yourself a piece of paper that's maybe dark color, and get yourself a lighter colored seasoning. Salt's a good one because it's cheap. And just practice that. Practice sprinkling. Because if you can't sprinkle evenly on a piece of paper, you're not going to sprinkle evenly on that steak that's on the barbecue.
Yeah,
or that piece of salmon.
When I worked with kids, I would have them take a pinch of something, you know, like a full finger pinch, like four fingers, just grab my pinch, and I'd have them sprinkle really close to the paper. Then the next one, I would have them take a pinch, and I'd take their fingers up, you know, 6 inches, and have them sprinkle and see how the different fall comes from their fingers. They go up a little bit higher, so they can see how it comes out and how it comes more down like snow the higher up you get.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. And that's the same thing that I was thinking is, you know, you want to be able to see the seasoning drop, right? You don't want to be looking at the paper. You don't want to be looking at your hand. You want to be looking in between your hand where you're sprinkling and the paper down below. And in between there, you can watch it fall. Like you just mentioned, snow. That's a great analogy. Yeah. To be able to sprinkle so you're seeing that it's going evenly. So just one of the many talents that you probably.
And also, you know, if you're using a dredge or a spice container that has the holes in top.
Yeah. Still need to sprinkle.
Still need to sprinkle. And then learning, you know, we have some garlic right now from Costco that has a great fall rate. That it just falls gnarly nice and even. But you have other things that they kind of clump together, and they're going to come out kind of chunky. And those are probably the things you're going to want to take the top off, put in your hand. Like you say, measure things in your hand. Take your fingers, grab a pinch, and then use your fingers to rub them apart so that they do have a better fall.
Yeah. And either in your hand or also something that works good is in a lid.
In the cap.
Like you take the cap off of something, and you put your, you know, let's say it calls for a teaspoon. I can look at a lid and tell you when there's a teaspoon in it. I'm just used to seeing what a teaspoon is, or a tablespoon, or a half teaspoon, or a quarter teaspoon. I know what it looks like. So you'll eventually, by doing that over and over, you'll gain that skill of being able to, so you're not having to go to the measuring, you know, to get the measuring spoons every time you go to make something. You just have that skill of being able to do it.
But if you do have the measuring spoons, sometimes you might want to dump them out, so because they can get kind of compacted in the spoon and kind of break them up, and sometimes you dump a full compacted teaspoon into a dish, and you got this blob, and you got to break it up. So if you can break it up, put it into the dish.
Yeah. Well, I would probably also recommend, you know, take it with your measuring spoon, and take a tablespoon out, or take a teaspoon out, and dump it into the lid. Literally mention it, or measure it, so you when you look at that, you say, oh, that's what a teaspoon looks like. Mm-hmm. Or that's what a half a teaspoon of ground pepper looks like. Or that's what, you know, a tablespoon of garlic looks like. So you get kind of used to visually, you know, what it looks like, where we are visual learners. I want to talk just a minute also about thickening agents. So I made a really nice stock the other day. I had a bunch of meat scraps, and I made just a beautiful stock. And my brother roasted off a beautiful prime rib, and we had it for a little family gathering this past weekend. I thought it came out really good. And I literally had there was no added beef stock, beef base, beef flavor. It was just this stock that was boiled down. So I took the mirepoix, your parsley, or your carrots, onion, and celery, and then your bouquet garni, your parsley, bay leaf, and thyme again, that's your aromatic seasonings, and then your vegetable seasonings, and then whatever your bones are in this case, or meat, in this case it was the beef scraps. And I boiled it down, and it was just absolutely amazing. Throw a little tomato in there. Remember, tomato always take the color brown and turn it into amber, so it's much more palatable looking. But when you thicken it up, and you're thickening up a stock, generally through French cooking, you would always use what we call a roux. That's R-O-U-X, roux, R-O-U-X. And it's just equal parts butter and flour. And
By weight.
And you know, you melt your butter, you add your flour, you stir it around, and I generally like to cook for a bit, you know, to be accurate. If you're making a cream sauce, it doesn't have to cook as much in the pot. You can go ahead, small pot with a handle, you can stir it up and then add it to your warm, you know, stock and milk combo for make your bechamel or your cream sauce. Same thing with, a brown sauce as well, but generally I'll cook the roux a little bit longer in the pan, just because it can get a little bit dark. Because the basic rule is when you thicken something is you don't want to taste the thickener, whatever it is. Cornstarch, arrowroot, flour, like if you're using and making it just a whitewash, or even roux. You don't want to taste the flour component because it's always going to give it that gluten, that stickiness. So it needs to cook out. So the flour has to cook out either in the pan with the butter or the small pot with the butter, or it has to cook out once you add it. And then whatever you're making needs to make sure that's going to simmer long enough so you don't get that. You ever feed the dog peanut butter? Something like that. It's that.
It's pasty, starchy pasty.
Yeah, that tongue stuck to your roof. I like to feed Remy peanut butter. It's just fun to watch. But anyway, that's what you want. You don't want that starchy. And you want to make sure that starch flavor always cooks out. And it's one of the things that bothers me. I guess I should use the right term. It bothers me when I go out to a restaurant. I'm like, God, they didn't cook this long enough. You know, let that flour, let that gluten, let that cook out. So because it's just going to be an off flavor that's going to mask something else. But cornstarch, is probably one of the more popular ones that people will use. In the old days, it was just, they called it a whitewash. It was just flour and water. But a slurry, which is cornstarch and water, we use a slurry for that.
Which that's usually used for in Asian cooking because it's more clear.
Yeah, you get a translucent product.
Yeah.
Yeah, the final product. So you think of things like your sweet and sour sauce or your teriyaki sauce.
Egg drop soup.
Yeah, those things. So that you can actually see the actual protein. You'll notice that when you go to Asian restaurants that cornstarch is the thing. Well, the arrowroot will do the same thing. In fact, arrowroot will make even a clearer sauce. The challenge with that is arrowroot's an awful lot more expensive than cornstarch. So it depends on what you're doing. But just one of the things to think about when you're whipping up your food. Another thing that I like to always remind people is when you look at a recipe and it has any herbs in it of any sort, chives, basil, rosemary, thyme, it doesn't matter, bay leaves, there's a big difference between fresh and dried. And I noticed that when we were writing these recipes for the book that it's really, really vital that you write that down because three dried bay leaves will overpower something if the recipe calls for three fresh bay leaves.
Because that'll be like the equivalent of nine.
Yeah, times three. You're right. And the thing about a fresh bay leaf is also it's producing bringing to the mix a really cool fresh flavor. A fresh bay leaf is just, it's great. We have a baylor tree that's, what is that, 6 feet tall or something in our backyard. How long have we had that? We've had it for a while.
About 7 or 8 years.
Yeah, so it's coming up on a decade. It's almost its birthday, but you only need one. I mean, we could supply bay leaves to the whole neighborhood and never run out.
Yeah.
But you get yourself is that called a baylor plant?
Bay laurel.
Bay laurel.
Laurel, like a circle.
Yeah, because I think you can pick them up for this time of the year, probably less than $20. Get yourself a little one. I've seen it for $16-18 and it's be the last bay leaf plant you ever buy. And
they're very hardy.
Yeah, they're hardy. You have to want to kill them if you're going to. But again, the final product and the flavor is so much better. And bay leaves are just those things that, they get old and they get crusty and they turn color and, that's one of the problems with buying spices and seasonings. If you can get your own set of containers and buy more of what you use and less of what you don't, and then have smaller containers so you can have a half ounce of a product in there, maybe something like white pepper, so it doesn't have all that air in the actual capsule or container that you have or the jar or whatever it's kept in, because air and light are the two things that are by far going to harm your both your herbs and any of your rest of your seasonings. You want to keep them in the dark. Keep them in the dark like mushrooms.
Yeah, any food products, air and light.
Yeah, and keep them in, also get darker containers. You know, that's another thing is that well, look at wine. Now, why do you think red wine is in a darker bottle? You know, because it protects the grape that's in there. And as it's going through that process, so again, fresh versus dried herbs. So, and then one last thing I wanted to mention on this here, also when it came this is all it's going to be in the cookbook. But al dente. And I was talking to someone about this over the weekend. I said, "What needs to be al dente?" And it was like, "Well, what's al dente?" And al dente, it means to the tooth. So simply, when you think about the description for the perfect doneness of both vegetables and pasta. And what the al dente means is broken down as to the tooth, but what it literally means is when you bite into something, it's not crunchy and it's not smushy, it's not soft. There's a slight resistance between your teeth, and then your teeth break through. So next time someone says something's al dente, you'll know whether to tell them. And if not, and you're not sure it's spaghetti, throw it up the ceiling and see if it sticks. That's what Mom used to tell us to do. It might have been Dad, maybe both of them. But I know me and my brothers loved to do it, and that's all that mattered. So anyway, we're taking our last break. We appreciate you listening to Cooking Like a Pro, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Oh, this is the night. It's a beautiful night, and we call it the
Ready to turn your dreams into reality? At Simpson University, we offer a private Christian education that enriches your academic journey with faith and purpose. Whether you're pursuing your undergraduate degree, completing your degree, or advancing through graduate studies, our dynamic programs, personalized mentorship, and vibrant community are here to support you. Discover how Simpson University can help you achieve your goals and grow spiritually. Visit simpsonu.edu today to learn more. Simpson University, where your potential is limitless.
I'm celebrating local heroes. Tune in the second Thursday each month at 6:05 p.m. right after the news for Heroes of the North State on North State Now. I'm Michelle Slade. During North State Now, we will speak with your neighbors, friends, family, and community members who give back, not to be recognized, but because it's the right thing to do. During these conversations, we will learn what truly makes our community and the people in it. Join me the second Thursday of each month at 6:05 p.m. right after the news for Heroes of the North State on North State Now.
For over 50 years, House of Realty has provided experienced and effective advice to its real estate clients. Experts in residential, commercial, and investment property, we have the knowledge and tools to assist you with all of your real estate needs. Family owned and operated since 1965, we have been an active part of the Shasta County community for generations. Please call House of Realty today at 241-8300, a reputation for excellence since 1965.
You remember when quality mattered more and people advertised low prices? When craftsmanship wasn't just a buzzword, but a way of life. At Cascade Curations, they never forgot. Their hand-selected collections honor that American tradition and the quality you grew up with. Quality clothing and low prices, just like they used to make them. Come see their showroom of men's and women's clothing across from Jack's Grill on California Street. And as always, they have free parking for their customers. Go by and see for yourself. Cascade Curations.
I found my thrill on Blueberry Hill. On Blueberry Hill. When I found you.
Welcome back. Again, we appreciate you listening to Cooking Like a Pro here, Chef Cal and Mrs. Chef. And appreciate Fats Domino bringing us back with Blueberry Hill. It's one of those things that when you're buying berries, and as we're going into berry season right now, we're just really hot and heavy into it. Over the next number of weeks, we're really going to be getting the best berries of the year. And blueberries is one of those things I wanted to touch on because blueberries, I mean, they're so great for you with antioxidants and all that stuff. My wife can probably go more on that side of the medical stuff. But the one thing I noticed is the blueberries go bad faster than anything else. So you need to know how to treat them. And Mrs. Chef has come up with a great way of being able to store them where they last longer. You want to share that?
Keep them in the freezer.
Keep them in the freezer? Well, keep them in the freezer for, yes, okay, all right, she's being smart. All right, okay, yes, keep them in the freezer. Her and our son Isaac use them in their smoothies. So they're great, and freezer is a great place to keep that. But I know that what we'll do is we'll rinse them off if we're going to have them in the refrigerator, and then we'll dry them real well, because you don't want moisture in your berries, because that's what's going to cause them to deteriorate and start to grow. So you want to dry them well, and I just keep them in the container they came in, but just lay a soft paper towel down and just allow them, because that paper towel will absorb any excess moisture. But again, you got berries coming up, from raspberries to strawberries. I mean, I'm excited because as I've been buying berries here lately, they're just getting better and better and better.
Well, you can also take and put them in water with a little bit of vinegar to help rinse them. Just let them soak for about 10 minutes to help deal with any dirt and bacteria that might cause them to go bad quicker.
You know, I noticed that you did that the other day, and I was actually kind of surprised, because I expected them to taste a little more tangy, and there really wasn't that much of a flavor transfer, because I mean, they already have, you know, an acid content, so it wasn't something that all of a sudden I could say, you know, it was obvious that these had been vinegar.
No, vinegar will go ahead and they're
kind of dissipate.
It dissipates, yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, so something to think about. Berry season coming up. Just think of all, take advantage of the time of year. I used to have these in all my restaurants. I've always had these. Get yourself, you can get them for free. Just go online and find just a list of fruit, both fruits and vegetables, and their seasonality throughout the year. And then just take, you're not sure what to make, or you're not sure what to put on the side of those beans, or that maybe it's a roast, and you look and, you know, baby green beans are in perfect season, or maybe it's Brussels sprouts, or maybe it's corn season. Because if you buy something in season, there are so many things that are going to be, more guaranteed than not. First off, they're going to have true natural flavor of being raised all the way to the point of being ripe. You know, because if you look at something like getting tomatoes, which don't grow in the wintertime where we are, but you get tomatoes in the store. Yeah, well, that's because they're coming from Mexico. Well, if they picked them when they were ripe, they would not be ripe by the time they got here. Because they have to be processed, they have to be picked, they have to be cleaned, they have to be processed, they have to be boxed, they have to be shipped, they have to be put in a store, and you have to, you know, so there's all these steps that, and those steps take a few days. But when you know the tomatoes are in season, I mean, unless you're growing your own, which is always best, this way you're assured to get the highest quality product. So take a look at have a seasonality list, and you take a look at that, and use that to be your inspiration. Use that to be your little chef. Right?
Give you an idea of what to cook tonight.
Yeah. So, or a side or something that's coming up, but this weekend you're going to be making, you know, salad. Well, what lettuce is right, is, you know, looking great, or citrus, or whatever it is you want to make. But then you're getting the true natural flavor. I know we're real blessed up here in Northern California that we have a lot of places around here that grow, you name it. But one of the things that popped in my head was strawberries. You can go get strawberries all over the place. We have people that grow strawberries in several towns, not just in the town that we live in up in Redding, California, but in other areas as well. You don't have to go that far to find some really good berries, really good fruit. And we really have a farmer's mentality in Redding, in Northern California. I'd say there's way more of a farmer's mentality than you're going to get in just about anywhere else. Certainly way more than you're going to have in a metropolitan area. You know, an area that has, you know, 500,000, 1.5 million, whatever. You know, it's a rural area, and you got people that are growing and producing stuff.
We're the top of the Central Valley.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, San Joaquin Valley runs through all the way up and down. I mean, from, you know, the grapevine? Yeah, the grapevine that separates us from Los Angeles. Basically, it starts there, down around Bakersfield and that Fresno area, and it just comes there all the way up. And whether you want, I mean, I drive down it all the time. We all do. And both sides, it doesn't matter where you go. There's walnuts or almonds or just varieties of plants and trees everywhere. And anyway, so there's a lot of those things. Someone had asked me about about tri-tip the last weekend also. And the reason the tri-tip, as long as you cook it right, and as long as you let it rest, and as long as you cut it carefully across the grain and have allowed it to rest, it's going to be tender. And the reason it's tender is because it comes from that flank area where you get your flank steak. So it's right in front of the round. Remember, the round is that big muscle that the cow has right around where, well, the sirloin is basically its butt, the round. So that whole area is a working muscle. So those muscles are going to have more connective tissue because it's a working muscle. But right in front of that, down at the bottom of the animal, which is actually below where you get your prime rib and you get your filet mignon, you get your New York, your porterhouse, your T-bone steak, down below that, underneath that, towards the bottom of the animal there, is where you get your tri-tip, and that's why tri-tip can be considered a really nice tender cut of meat. But remember, if you're cooking it correctly, you know, even a cut of meat from a tougher area can be something that's quite enjoyable. But you're going to use a wet cooking method. You're going to turn it into pot roast. You're going to turn it into a really nice stew, or you're going to braise it or something along those lines.
Well, you took the tri-tip that you were talking about, and that's where you made that brown sauce you were talking about earlier. You had done a bunch of trimmings.
Yep.
So if you are going to trim out a tri-tip, don't throw away that meat. Turn it into a sauce.
Oh, yeah. Always save your trim and your scraps. One of the things a lot of people don't think about is saving your shells if you're doing shrimp. If you buy shrimp, when I buy shrimp, I buy it in the shell. And I take the shells off, and then you can freeze the shells and just use those as your shrimp bones, basically. And that's where you get your shrimp flavor. So if you want to make a shrimp sauce, you're all ready to go. We were talking about fresh versus dried, and I also wanted to mention this quickly, and that's refreshing your lettuces. Always refresh your lettuces. Your lettuces are always going to be 90 to 97% water, so they need to be put back in water. So you buy them, you clean them, you refresh them in ice water, drain them carefully, and then put them in your fridge, maybe cover them with a paper towel, and you'll get 3-4 days longer out of that head of lettuce, so that whether it's a romaine or butter lettuce or iceberg, because you've added more moisture back to it.
That was a trick that my dad always did. As soon as he brought home lettuce, he would immediately rinse it and get water in between the leaves and then back in the bag so that it was completely covered in water so it would hold longer.
Mm-hmm.
And also, actually, I kind of shocked our high schooler the other day. I was making a salad, and I went and took all the leaves off, and I was soaking them. And he's like, what are you doing? And I said, I'm trying to bring the lettuce back to life. He's like, I didn't know you could do that. You can bring limp lettuce back to life.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, until it's, you know, completely bone dry, but you can refresh things. And what you want to do is you want to get it back to a point of being crisp.
Hydrated, yeah.
Yeah, so if you want to allow that to soak in. We had went out to a restaurant a while back, too, and I had gotten a hot dish. It was a mac and cheese, but it was served with a cold bowl. And it just reminded me of something that it was really the first thing I remember when I go all the way back to my apprenticeship. The first thing I was told was hot food on hot plates, cold food on cold plates. And there's nothing that drives me nuts more than, I mean, certainly you don't want a salad on a warm plate. Right, that's the opposite as well. I'm probably just as bad as having hot food and putting it on a cold plate, especially if it's a bound item, you know, like it's a stew, or in this case it was a mac and cheese. But you know, we always warm our plates up at home. So anyway, things that you need to know. But anyway, we're going to be we do our podcast here on KCNR, and we've been doing this for about 10 months.
11 months,
and we're going to, so almost a year, and we're going to continue to do it, but we're going to be doing it as a podcast, not as a live radio show. So where, as of the end of this month, where are they going to be able to find not just our archived and you know, show, which is archived without commercials, which is great because it's much shorter, but where are they going to be able to find us? Because I know we're going to keep doing the podcast. We're just not going to be doing it here, but you'll still find it where?
Yeah, we're still going to be recording it, and it's still be going out on the podcast. We can find it on culinarilyyours.net.
Yeah.
All of our podcasts are on there.
Yeah.
You can find the podcast Cooking Like a Pro on Apple, and Spotify. So we will still be recording. We just won't be doing sending it out live.
We'll still be doing it once a week. We almost have 50. Must have almost 50 archived because there's 52 weeks in a year. So we're getting close to once we get caught
up. Yeah,
we're
getting up around 40, somewhere around there. 40,
yeah. So there's a lot of Chef Cal and Mrs. Chef that you can listen to.
But the best way is if you go on and you get any of our freebies. If you get the barbecue sheet, if you get the cooking, if you get the cleaning or the vegetable one. Mm-hmm. If you get on our list, I will send out an email each week every time we post a podcast.
Sounds great. And well, anyway, be intentional out there, folks. Be intentional about being kind. Kindness makes the world go around. We appreciate you listening and you be blessed. God bless you, folks. And we will talk to you next week here on Cooking Like a Pro here at KCNR.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.